And I'm going to introduce you. Good evening, everybody. Today, I'm joined with a special guest from Dublin, Ireland. We've got Mark Casey. Mark is a successful IT consultant, and he's going to share his story on how he came from being homeless to a successful IT consultant that he is today. Mark, thank you so much for coming on to the show. Please, can you tell us a little about yourself and talk us through your journey of self-discovery?
Kira, first and foremost, I'm truly grateful for you for asking me to do a podcast with you. And it's, you know, you're just the work that you're doing with, you know, so many other people, and getting the message of hope out that you can be whatever it is that you want to be is just fantastic. And
thank you,
me,
Robert.
Yes, I know you really are doing fantastic work. And me, I'm 47. I was born in Clondalkin in 1976 in an estate called, it was originally called Clonburris Estate, and then they renamed it to Oakwood. And I
was where the secondary school is, the ladies' secondary school. I'm originally from Green Park, Clondalkin.
Yeah, that's not too far away. Yeah, and I went to the they're not boys, you know, the national school there, big red brick, red brick national school.
Mile Park?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, now you're taking me back a bit, you're making me feel old.
I'm taking myself back, I've left there since I was 13.
I know, yeah, but that's where it was originally from. And I think we moved out of there from when I was about seven. And we moved up there. As a family, they moved up to the top of the Dublin Mountains to a four-bed bungalow in the middle of nowhere. Your closest neighbour was literally 500 metres down the road, and going from the hustle and bustle of living in Clondalkin, where, you know, kids everywhere run up and down the street, you know, bicycle crashes, people going around in makeshift, not skateboards, or go-karts and kind of stuff like that. Yeah. It was great, like, you know? That's where I was originally from. And then,
And you moved to Rathfarnham then, didn't you?
Yeah, moved to Rathfarnham, lovely estate called Pine Valley. Moved from Kilmashogue, then down to a lovely estate called Pine Valley. My dad and my mother was a stay-at-home mom, and my dad, he was the breadwinner of the family, and that was his job. And it was a nice upbringing, you know. While there was nothing chaotic about it, it was just nice, you know.
It's the way things were back then. The men of the relationship would go out and bring the steak home, as it were.
Yeah, pretty much. And I finished. I was the last year to do the. The last year to do the group cert, and the last year to do the intercert, and the intercert, whatever they call it, something else now.
Yes, you've got your junior certificate and you've got your
junior
cert. Over in the UK now, they have different terminology as well. But yes, your terminology is, for a man of your vintage, different.
So it's last year to do the group cert. You did the group cert in second year. And it was an state exam, and then you did the intercert, and that was a state exam, and I passed both of them, you know, by literally the skin of my teeth, literally. How I managed it was beyond me. I was never that
academic,
you know, but I always loved stuff that made sense to me, you know, if that made sense, you know, stuff that I could relate and go, oh yeah, I like that. You know, it would be interesting now.
We kind of find that when we leave school, because I always say this to my little brother and my nieces, you know, school does not define you by any stretch of the imagination. And I've done a lot of academic work, but in school you're asked to, you know, learn 8 subjects, and we're not all going to be English, maths, you know, we have different parts of the brains that we like to exercise. And when you're so young to be expected to be getting A's and B's and all these different academia, it's totally unreasonable, really. You know, you have to be amazing at maths to be a doctor. They're totally different. It's when you leave school, you kind of find your calling.
I fully agree with you there. Yeah, I fully do. After the intercert, I remember my principal, and I used to be down to principal's office an awful lot.
You're a
And
naughty
actually,
boy, Mark.
yeah, we were on first name basis. You know, I went to Clochdane in Rathfarnham, and his name was Brendan, and Brendan Bond was his name. And I remember at some point during the summer there was a knock on the door. Well, I opened the door. And there's a principal. I was like, Brendan, what are you doing? I need to come and see your mom and dad. And he was like, oh, right, okay. Call mom and dad. And he came in, and mom treated him like he was the Pope, you know, that he walked into the, you know, we'd have cake, tea, and all this type of stuff. Do you want sugar, cream? And I was like, I didn't even know we had cream. You
All the
know?
good stuff gets taken
All the
out.
good stuff, you know. I was like, I had a known cream, I would have been out all day. But anyway, but he said, listen, Mark needs to do a transition here. He needs to do a transition year because he's not going to make it through 5th and 6th year. Not a chicken chance of tie on it, you know. And I did 4th year. I did an awful lot of growing up in 4th year.
Really?
I was made at the time. I was made class master. So all the guys were in the class. They would come to me. I was the go-between all the guys in the class and the head of 4th year. So he would just come to me, how's the lads getting on? I'd be like, yeah, grand, yeah, grand. And, you know, they're doing this and that, organize them for work experience and all that really good stuff, you know. And at the time, you know, I thought I wanted to be a chef. Unfortunately, I honestly thought I wanted to be a chef, but, you know, and I got job experience in a lovely place called Cheeverstown House over on a bypass in Dublin 24. And, I was thrown in there, and the chef had me every Wednesday just chopping onions. And I was like, oh, after about 4 or 5 weeks, I was like, not a hope of being a chef. If this is what I have to do,
You have to crawl before you can
I
walk.
know you have to crawl, but I wanted it fast. You know what I mean? But I decided then after that I want to be a baker. You know, and then I went to, and I got in work experience with a company that's now gone again. Teton Express used to be over in Sandyford and Duchess. Like, I was doing everything, baking cakes, you know, wrapping cakes, and you know, anything from it was just I was like a general dog's body, but I loved it, you know, it was
Loved
great.
it.
I was dealing, I used to work with so many headbangers, you know what I mean? And the crack was mighty, as they say, you know. So.
It's good when you find somewhere to kind of bring that fun element into it, because when you're growing up, you don't really understand the fundamentals and what it means to actually have your own career. You know, you just care about getting your bit of cash at the end of the week. You're not really that focused on what your goals are and where you want to go in life. And you were saying that you had a normal upbringing. You had a beautiful family that loved you dearly. Tell us a bit about what happened. I mean, I've read a little bit of the blog that you sent in before this call. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more, but I suppose we can talk about that. Where did life change for you, and how did things end up so bad? And then how did you turn it around? Because the story is very inspiring, very, very inspiring.
As I said, you know, I had a normal upbringing. Well, normal, you know, normal, and as normal as any family can be. But I grew up with this an emptiness within inside me, a loneliness, a sadness, and all happiness within inside me, and I didn't know who I was, and I really didn't. And for a good part of my life, I turned to alcohol to fill that void within my life, and it worked for a good while until it stopped working. And it all came to a head to me back in July 2020, just after COVID kicked in, and I had lost the house that I was living in. I'd lost my car, I'd lost my job, and my family didn't know me. They really didn't care about me. And but worse than for once, I didn't care about me.
How many
And
years did that go on for before you went to and it came to a halt? How many
it was
years?
progressive. It was progressive, I would say. I would have always had an issue with it, but it really didn't come to a head until that isolation of COVID brought the isolation in, you know. And one of the things, you know, when you're addicted to anything, that it wants to keep you isolated. It wants to keep you disconnected from society, from yourself, and everything outside of you. And that's where I wants to keep you. And that's what happened to me. And I end up having I end up in hospital after breaking my jaw, falling down on my face, and I end up, you know, with a fractured jaw and having to get an operation and all that type of stuff. And after all that was done, I end up being essentially kicked from the hospital onto the in and out of the hostels of in Dublin City, which was absolutely horrific. And you know, it's like one of those things, you know, when we all have these ideas of where we see ourselves, you know. I never thought I'd see myself in that type of situation ever. You know, I don't think anybody wakes up one morning and goes, you know, I'm going to make a decision today to be homeless. I'm going to make a decision today to have no money. I'm going to make the decision today to hang out with people and do crazy things that I thought I'd never do before.
In your mind, did you always feel that you weren't going to be destitute? Did you think at any point, perhaps 2 or 3 months before you actually ended up in a hostel, do you know, I'll be fine, or I won't really get kicked out of a home, or I won't lose this? Did you feel, or was it the realization only actually got in when you were in the hostel that you said, wow, this is my surroundings?
It wasn't until I got into hospital. I realized the severity of the situation I was in. Mm-hmm. I had a social worker come to me, a lovely fellow by the name of Owen was his name. Don't forget, I can't remember his second name, but he came to me when I was in, I got transferred from Tala Hospital to James's Hospital. And he came in to me, that's where he did the operation job. And he said to me, listen, Mark, do you want to change your life? And I said, do you really think I want to be doing this anymore? He's like, no, do you really want to change this? Yeah. He said, well, listen, I'm going to do everything I can for you, but you're going to have to go into the hospitals. I mean, it's not going to be nice. It's not going to be easy. But if you can make it through there, you'll make it anywhere. I was like, okay, good. And so that's when I went to the hospitals. And I was blessed. And I was blessed, Kira, that I got a phone call from a lovely charity called the Dublin Simon Community. And they do terrific work. They really, really do. And just down the road here from, I'm living out towards Malahide, every night they have an outreach program that comes down and gives food to the homeless, whatever they need, whatever they have that they can give them, they give it to them. And I see them from time to time doing what they do. And then they took me in off the streets in around, it would have been September. I think it was the second or first or second of September. Took me in, detoxed me, fed me, gave me a bed. And for the first time, you know, in my life, somebody actually put their arm around me and said to me that, you are okay. You are enough. Exactly as you are today. And I've never experienced such kindness, warmth, such love.
It's like an unconditional love.
Absolutely. Pure acceptance. You know, pure acceptance. And so they brought me in. And again, they fed me, they gave me a bed. You know, I had a bed because there was nights, you know, when I was in there in the hostels that I couldn't get a bed. I'd have to sleep under a railway bridge just to, you know, get out in the rain and stuff like that. And but that was just my life the way it was at the time. I didn't know any different. And one of the things that we become, I believe, as people, we become used to the things that we are doing. We sometimes we normalize it. You know, we just, it becomes the norm. And
Yeah.
So Dunsire Community took me in. And then
What did you need to qualify to get in there? Did you have to show that you were X amount of days off the booze? Did you have to show, you know, some sort of commitment to them? Do they, what is the process to actually get into the Simon Community? And why were you not there before the hostels? Why did you have to go through the hostels before you were seen to, before you got seen to by the Simon Community?
See, one of the things with this Dublin Sign Community that I was blessed that I had my facial injury, that my jaw was all messed up, right? So they had this program at the time called Step Up and Step Down. So you step up, you come in and you're in there for a week or two, you're in there and Step Up program, and Step Down is that they do their best to get you housed or, you know, some type of, but just somewhere else. And the program that I was in, you would have to have, you know, be addicted to, you know, tablets, alcohol, and, you know, on any kind of narcotic or any of that type of stuff. And, you know, so I had my facial injury, you know, I was coming off the booze. And so they accepted me, you know, and I remember getting a phone call. Honestly, just went well for me. I was, you know, drinking vodka on the boardwalk at the side of the Liffey one day, you know, with vodka in one hand, a mobile phone in your hand, the mobile phone rings, and it was the Dublin Simon Community, and I was like, who are you? And I didn't know. I was like, oh, listen, the operas at 10:30 in the morning on Usher's Island on the keys, and be sober. And I was like, God, be sober, you're kidding me. I was like, right, okay, right. And I did. So I got rid of the vodka, went back to the hostel I was in, packed up my stuff, held on to my stuff. Half of my stuff was gone from the hostel anyway. And yeah, so I didn't have that much. And I didn't have any money at the time to get it from Gardiner Street up to Usher's Island on the keys. And I had 3 black bags and I dragged them the keys, and I made it there literally for 10:30 on the button, and I was brought in. But halfway through those first 9 weeks, and I was given the opportunity, and again it was an opportunity that they had this recovery program, and based up in Inchicore in Dublin, and I had to put in an application for it. I had to apply for it. And then once you apply for it, it would be reviewed, and then you would have to do an interview with them to see if you were, I don't know if it was the, if you were the right stuff or whatever it was, but they just wanted to see that, yeah, okay, if we take you in here, you're going to give it your all, you know. And I remember going up, I still remember this to this day, you know. I went up and I met these two lovely women, one called Sharon, one called Fiona. And Fiona was like very straight laced, you know, she'd be looking up and down in the glasses and she'd be doing a lot of interesting, really. And then you had the other one, Sharon's all bubbly and she's you know, and you're kind of like, I remember Fiona saying to me, you know, and Fiona saying to me at the time, going, right. And she said to me, Mark, what are you prepared to do to turn your life around? And I was like, whatever it is that I need to do to turn my life around. And then she said to me, right. And then what are you prepared to do? I just kind of looked at her and said, are you asking me how far I'm willing to go and how determined I am to go to turn my life around? And she said, yeah. I said, I will do whatever it takes, but I'm going to need an awful lot of guidance from you, because everything that I've done up until now hasn't worked. So I'm prepared to listen to you guys. And you, whatever it is that you tell me to do, I'll do it. And then they were chatting a little bit longer, and then they turned around to me and said, just after the interview or the assessment was finished, they turned around and said, listen, Mark, we haven't done this in a long, long time, but we've accepted you. and we'd love to have you here. And I literally broke down in tears. I was literally in tears. I mean, I was hugging them. I was like, oh my God, you have no idea what this means to me. To, you know.
There is the sign of hope again.
Absolutely, hope. You know, and one of the, it was kind of like, for me, one of the things that, you know, we can spend an awful lot of time in the darkness, you know, and they, for me, were that light for me in the darkness. And I walked through their doors on the 6th of October, 2020, at 11:52 a.m. And I was blessed to be with them for 9 months. I literally spent 9 months with them. I did their recovery program 3 times. And it's not because I needed to do it 3 times.
That's what I was going to say, but you got so much out of the first time that you wanted more.
That, absolutely, there was that. And in the program I was in at the time, there was 10 of us. And 10 of us in that program. And they had apartments. Everybody had their own separate room and stuff like that. We had to have group meetings. And one of the things, you know, I have it, and I still call him this to my, you know, to this day, my guy. You know, and I love you, man, by the name of Paul. And we're still friends today, and we talk, and he's I call him my guru, you know, and I listen to everything that he said, and I question everything that he said. I would go off and I would investigate everything that he said. I was curious about everything that he said, and I would, to this day, that he said to me, you know, Mark, I gave you a seed. I gave you a few seeds. You planted them. You watered them. They started to grow. You cultivated them. And they grew into the person that you are today. And I'll tell you one thing, though. You know, one of the hardest things for me, Kira, and I believe it's one of the hardest things for people, that when we go down the road of self-discovery, we have to deal with an awful lot of demons, you know, that we haven't dealt with before. We have to deal with an awful lot of our emotions that we might have never dealt with before. And an awful lot of thoughts, an awful lot of feelings, and the whole lot. And try to figure out, why do we do the things that we do? And a big, how to say, eureka moment for me was, I remember sitting at a desk, and I was truly blessed that the Dublin Sign community gave me a desk. And I do a huge amount of writing, a huge amount of journaling. I do a huge amount of practicing being grateful each and every day. And I was sitting there one day, and I was just kind of this moment going, it was like, oh my God moment. And it literally was, oh my God, Mark, every conscious or unconscious decision that you have ever made in your life has brought you to this point. Sitting here in the Dublin Sign community at this desk, jobless, homeless, okay, you do have a roof, but you've no home. But I made it my home as best as I possibly could. And no money, you know, no prospects, but every decision that you've ever made has brought you to here. And then I was like, my God. Right, Mark, you really need to get conscious about how you are thinking.
Were you always, did you have a career before you became an alcoholic and things broke down?
I did lots of things.
You were always into so many different things. You had something to grow, as it were. Yeah. So tell me, when all this happened and you had your aha moment and you got your help, how did you decide to go into consultancy? Was IT something that you had experienced before and you decided to go back at it? And where did the success levels and the mentality change?
I was always into IT. I was always doing a bit of IT. I'd done car sales, and I'd done lots of different things. Honestly, I didn't work in McDonald's. I've done stuff, but IT was just one of those things that always made sense to me. Like it just made sense. And I remember, you know, when I was with the signing community, and then Paul, you know, he would have one of these big charts and he'd be writing on the board about, you know, certain things. And I was like, right, okay. And lots of times I used to, you know, say things to him like, listen, explain this to me like I'm a 4-year-old, right? And he'd go, right, Mark, okay. And he was very kind and compassionate and empathetic towards me. And then remember one day I said, right, and I went up and he said, right, okay. So if I'm right about this, and I looked at it from an IT point of view, as in, right, so what you're saying to me is that I have all these programs running around in my head. So I have a program from my dad, I have a program from my brother, program from my sister, program from my job, program from my car, I have a program for everything, and a program from my thoughts and how we're feeling about me. So programs rolling all over the place. But suddenly I'm not working anymore. He's like, yes. I said, right, okay. I drew all these little boxes out. So are you telling me that all I need to do with those programs is rewrite the code? And he's like, yes. I was like, oh, okay. Right. Right, brilliant, excellent. Tell me how to do it. And I did everything that he told me. I did affirmations. I'd be up at 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, doing affirmations, doing my gratitude list, and try to find it. Hopefully, looking on my positivity, as you know, each and every. And I was doing this from 5 o'clock in the morning till, I think, 11, 12 o'clock at night. I get a few hours sleep. Well, I was truly blessed to be able to do that for 9 months, day in, day out. Yeah, and that was just my commitment and determination into changing my life around.
I think you were very blessed to find someone who brought the spiritual element into your healing process as well. A lot of people, you know, they can be very good academic or intellectually, but they don't understand, you know, the world as a whole. You know, what is the saying? Your mind is a garden. Your thoughts are the seeds, and you can plant flowers or you can plant weeds. That was said many years ago to me, and it's very true. What we put in, we definitely get out. It's what we're taking in and what we're going to water, as you said earlier on. Yeah. So I really like that he had that spiritual element into it.
Absolutely.
Even with the gratitude, for years, people would say to me, always practice gratitude, but nobody ever told me why. And recently I was listening to Tony Robinson talk
about gratitude.
It's amazing. But he said the reason why we talk about gratitude and say it is because it's a higher vibrational thing. And also you cannot ever be two emotions at once. So you can't be angry and sad at the same time. You can't be, So yeah, that's really interesting.
This is my latest gratitude journal.
That's beautiful. Mark's gratitude journal. Truly blessed, you're grateful, truly kind, truly caring. And what's the end one say? It's just a shine on it.
Always grateful.
Always grateful. That's beautiful.
This is my fourth. What are we into it? That's my fourth one. You know, my fourth one this year. And you know, and this is the kind of stuff that I have in it. You know, there's lots of really good stuff in it.
So tell me this, Mark, because we've left.
That changed my life.
Absolutely, it does change people's lives to get them in a different state. We've less than 9 minutes left before they're going to cut us off. But can you tell me, from everything that you've learned and from your journey, what's a typical sad or maybe bad day for you now, as compared to perhaps before when you were homeless? What are the differences when you're having a bad day now? How does it differ from before? Where's your head and your mind?
A bad day for me today is when I don't know what's going on inside me. When I don't know what's going on, let's say I'm feeling low. I'm just feeling low. And I have to sit with myself. And there's times I can, you know, mainly at times drive my hour and a half. Man, I'd still get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And I love my hour and a half just to sit, be, write my gratitude list. And nine times out of 10, if there is something going on with me, I'll generally write it out of myself through that hour of, you could call it meditation, just sitting, being in the silence. It'll work its way out. The answer will always come. And then I could just be sitting there going, now I know what it is.
You're addressing the issue as opposed to having a drink to cover the issue. You're digging in and
Absolutely.
trying to find it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd sit there. And the answer always comes from me in the silence, in the peace, in the stillness. Always does. And so for me, that's it. That's the height of a bad day for me now today. And I'm, you know, I'm truly blessed now today to be living with my fiance in a we have a lovely 3-bedroom apartment. You know,
Congratulations.
all that really, really good stuff, like, you know, but one of the just ask me, am I happy today? Yeah,
Yeah,
I'm very
so what I
happy today.
meant is, you know, years ago, when this all happened, a bad day would have consisted very differently for you because you wouldn't have had the tools that you have now. So your bad day now only goes to a certain level. It never goes to, I'm on the Liffey, I'm having my vodka and I want to jump off type thing. You now have the tools to understand how to kind of get out of that bad day. I mean, we are only human. We all have bad days, we all have good days, but it's good that you now have the tools. You know, once you learn the tools, you can't unlearn. You know it, you know, you've raised your conscious awareness.
Absolutely. I love what you said there about the tools. Yeah. And, you know, raising, having an awareness and conscious awareness. And because most of us, when I speak with people and people that I help, you know, on a daily basis, and I do help a good few people, and I'm not a certified, so all I have is my experience and all that's it. But most of us, I believe, spend our time going around the hamster wheel, day in and day out,
Very true.
day out, and we keep on getting the same results over and over again, and nothing ever changes until we change. We get off the hamster wheel and just go, why is my life the way it is? And I believe it all comes down to our thinking. And just me, I believe a lot. Well, my life became my life in the way that it was because of my thinking. I was able to turn my life around because of my thinking. And one of the things I did, one of the things that I did when I was with the Simon community, I used to share an apartment with a lovely fellow by the name of Alan, and Alan used to live with beside me in Clondalkin when I was growing up. And I remember he actually beat me up one day. And we did when we were kids, you know, and we both ended up in the same community, call it, you know, Providence or whatever you want to call it. And anyway, what Alan used to do for me every day, sorry, first of all, what I needed to do was I needed to catch my thinking. I needed to catch where I was each and every day, right? And what I would do is I would set myself alarms on my phone, 4 of them a day, random one. And I'd go around with a book like this, you know, in my backpack and a pen, you know, and the alarm would go off. And then no matter where I was, I'd write down what's going on for me right now. How am I feeling? What am I thinking? What is it? And then I'd write down exactly what I'm thinking. And, you know, for the first time, I felt like an idiot doing it. But I was like, no, I was determined to get to the root of, you know, what I was thinking about. And then 4 hours later, it would happen again. I'd sit down and then, but my brain got really smart then. My brain got really used to, well, there's an alarm going off here at 10 o'clock in the morning, you know. And so, listen, we'll just say everything's grand. Okay, everything's grand. And I was like, so what I did, began to then, I began to, I gave Alan my phone. I said, Alan, set me 4 random alerts on the phone. 4 random alerts that I don't know about. Just give me the phone. And he set 4 random alarms on whatever, walking down the street and the phone, boom, I just had to catch myself, you know, each and every time. And I got used to that. And it was only through catching, you know, how I was thinking, how I was acting, how I was feeling, that I was able to correlate my state of mind, my state of being in that moment. And then one of the things I believe is that, you know, I practice gratitude each and every day. You know, I practice, you know, being positive as best as we possibly can. But whatever we practice, we become good at. We become really, really good at. We practice something each and every day. In a way, we become experts at it. So if we're practicing being negative each and every day, we become really, really good at that.
Yes, it takes 56 seconds for you to think a negative thought to have another negative thought follow. So people often wonder why they're feeling down. If you allow that negative, it's just about switching your mind. I'm often in traffic driving and I get a little bit of road rage and I'm going, you know, rushing to a place. Then I'll just quickly shout out, you've got a lovely car, your hair's lovely, but I have to try switch it to say three positive things.
Try reframe it, just turn it around.
Yeah.
Now, what I found in the early days, when I started this, for every negative thought initially, you know, I'd have to bombard it with at least four positive ones, you know, just to kind of, you know, but it's so much easier to, you know, be in the, oh my God, you know, my life is terrible. How dare you cut me off in traffic and all this. So much easier to do that than to go, I hope you have a great day. Do you know what I mean? Don't worry about it. Fine.
It is. It's very inspiring. Mark, we're down to 1 minute and 34 seconds. Before you go, you're writing a book, from what I hear.
I am indeed writing two of them.
You're writing two. What are the names of the books and where can we find them?
I'm writing two. I'm writing one at the moment. One is called The Attitude of Gratitude. And it's about 156 pages on how gratitude can turn our lives around, and an awful lot of my own gratitude quotes in it. I only have them both in PDF at the moment. And the other one is called All Fixed and Better in brackets.
Brilliant. We'll probably be able to find that on Amazon.
It will be at some point.
Well, when you do publish it, please do let me know and I'll put it up on the platform. We're down to less than 60 seconds. So I'm going to wrap it up. Mark, thank you so much.
Truly great.
Honestly, your story is really inspiring and I wish you every bit of success and thank you for coming on today.
Thank you so much, Karen. You're very good.
Thank you.